Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Hackers and HackZen podcast. You're about to join Erica, Jax, and John for an inclusive cybersecurity conversation designed to educate and break the stereotypes of cybersecurity professionals while providing life hacks on how to handle burnout, networking, and goal setting. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hey guys, welcome. We are super excited today for our guest. We have Dr. Ruth Gotian. Dr. Gotian is actually the host of the Mentor Project's sister podcast called Optimize Your Success. What this podcast is actually it's the audio script from her live events, which are held every Monday night from 8 to 9 p.m. So a really quick bio about Dr. Gotian. She is the Chief Learning Officer and the Assistant Professor of Education and Anesthesiology. She is also the former Assistant Dean of Mentoring and Executive Director of Mentoring at Weill Cornell Medicine. She is also a contributor to Forbes and Psychology Today, where she writes about optimizing your success. So Ruth, you and I have connected before. We have an interview together on Meet Your Mentor, and I've been to a couple of your Optimize Your Success, and I am so excited to have you here with us today. How are you doing?
I am so pumped to be here. I am excited and well caffeinated, so ready to go.
This is a topic, as soon as Erica and John and I had determined that we wanted to talk about imposter syndrome, you were the very first person that popped into my mind, because this is something that you talk about with the individuals that you work with, which are high performers. And what I'd like to do, in your words, before we really dive into this, is have you tell the listeners a little bit more about your background so they can understand your knowledge base on this.
Sure. So I have been working in higher education for almost 30 years, of which the last 24 in academic medicine, minus 2 years somewhere in the middle where I worked in finance and banking. But essentially, I have always been working with high achievers. And I got my doctorate. I started it when I was 43 years old. And I looked at the most successful physician scientists of our generation. And since then, I've expanded that research to include other really, really peak high achievers. So Nobel laureates, astronauts, Olympic champions, Fortune 500 CEOs, certain politicians, people of that caliber. And I realize that they all have four things that they all do in tandem. So I just surround myself with incredibly high achieving people who are really nice, grounded people who also give back. Those are my people.
So you had a live event for imposter syndrome, and some of the things that we talked about with the high achievers on there, and I've noticed this too within the world of working with the high achievers on my end, it's a common thing. And I want to know, why is that? Why is it when we are high achievers and we are exceeding, especially with women, I feel like it's more prevalent, but why do you see that within high achievers? We're doing these things, we're exceeding really well, yet we feel like we're an imposter in our world.
Right. So first of all, nobody's an overnight success, right? It's an overnight success that took decades to get there, with a lot of failures and bumps and bruises and challenges and hurdles along the way. When imposter syndrome was first coined, it was actually, they looked at women and minorities who were actually, they thought, getting it more often. In reality, 70% of us actually get imposter syndrome. And I even push back on that statistic a little bit, because I think the other 30% get it and don't realize that's what it is that they're feeling, or they're narcissists. So in reality, I think everyone probably has it in some form or another. And the reason they do that is because, what do you mean I'm successful? Because that success is just one thing that they did. And all the high achievers that I speak to, all the Olympic champions and the Nobel laureates, they say that it is one chapter in their lives. It's not the story of their lives. So getting that big success all of a sudden, easy come, easy go, is what they feel like, because that gold medal is one day. But what it took to get there was years and years and years of overcoming these challenges and hurdles. So I think they're just afraid that they're going to either be seen as a fraud, it's going to be taken away. And imposter syndrome usually rears its ugly head after a big event, such as getting an award, getting a recognition of some sort, accomplishing something major. That's when it really hits.
Yeah. So to piggyback on that, Dr. Gautien, what does imposter syndrome like really mean? I mean, I think that this term really came to light in the past couple of years where I started hearing, you know, imposter syndrome. And I think that there's a lot of different, you know, definitions of it floating around. What does it really mean? And how can like we be self-aware of whether we're experiencing it or not?
So it's a feeling that you feel like a fraud after you've accomplished something, that you don't really deserve it, that you're going to be viewed as a fraud and it's going to be taken away. And really, it could impact you in such a way that it'll keep you up at night. You can't eat or you'll eat too much. You're constantly worrying about it. It adds to your cognitive load. You'll break out in cold sweats. It really just impacts you because you're so afraid of being seen as a fraud, because the challenges is what really has taken up most of your life, most of your career. So again, it usually happens right after a big achievement. And know that it's 100% normal and it doesn't last forever.
That's good to know. I think a lot of listeners need to hear that.
Yes, it does have a timestamp for sure. But you can get it repeatedly. You can definitely get it repeatedly.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, you know, we're in these four corners right here on the screen of four very excellent high achievers who are constantly challenging ourselves. And I think that's one of the things too, is it holding ourselves to these standards and having, you know, having that fear of being a fraud creeping in, it even impacts us, right? The high achievers, the high performers. So I think too, we also feel like that spotlight's on us, where like we have that standard on us. And then we think that, you know, individuals are going to look up to us, like we can't make mistakes. So when we do make a mistake, because we're human, we have that fraud and that fear of being found out as a fraud come in. So I would love to know, you know, what is it from your personal experience? How have you dealt with imposter syndrome? What, like, give us an example or a situation of where imposter syndrome creeped up in your life, where you actually had a very good success story that could be illustrated and published to the public, but deep down you had something, you had that voice creep in. What did that look like? How did you deal with it and how did you overcome it?
So it does happen. And it happens again for me after big publications. I write for academic journals and some of the mainstream media journals such as Forbes. And when I have an article that all of a sudden goes viral, I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited to get those thoughts out, but I'm also really nervous. And I get that imposter syndrome then. And when I post it on social media, I sort of say this little prayer of maybe it shouldn't go viral, because then is when the imposter syndrome actually really kicks in. And I've actually taken down posts. That's how bad the imposter syndrome got, because I couldn't take any more likes and retweets. I couldn't take it anymore. And it was true. It wasn't that I was saying anything that wasn't true, but it was just too much fanfare for me. So I have actually taken things down as a result. So it can happen, and it does happen, and it happens to everyone. And in fact, every single high achiever I have spoken with, first of all, they tell me they're not a high achiever. And I'll say to them, but you got the Nobel. If you don't qualify, who does? Or you have multiple Olympic gold medals. If you don't qualify, who does? And, you know, I always ask the Olympians, I said, where do you keep your Olympic medals? And it's not on display. There was only one that had it framed on display in the back of the Zoom background that I could see. Nobody else has it. One person has it in storage. One is in a lockbox. One had it in a brown paper bag in his sock drawer. One of them even gave them all away. He gave them all away to the Hall of Fame Museum for his sport. He said, I couldn't have it in the house. It was suffocating. It was suffocating because it's so much to live up to all the time. So he gave it away. So if that's what happens to Olympic gold medalists and to Nobel laureates, how are the rest of us who didn't achieve that level supposed to feel? But there are things that we can do to actually, when imposter syndrome does come up, there are things we can do to help mitigate it a little bit. So you want to hear what they are?
Absolutely.
Yes, please.
You're saying all this, and with the I just want to put in a little plug there, is that with my recent book that came out this past December, we're in January, and I've had copies shipped to my house, and the moment they get to the house, I have to send them out to people because I cannot have the book around me. So I love that you said that, and I just wanted to say that like even with something recent as publishing a book, it affects me to where I'm like, I can't have it in the house. Wow. I can't have it here.
Oh, I wonder if that's what's going to happen, because I'm writing my book now on the high achiever. So is that something I have to look forward to? I don't know.
Yeah. And the publicity, like you said, the fanfare that comes with it. You know, you were talking about fanfare. My head is ringing because I almost felt like I had like a stress disorder, because the moment my book got put out, you know, my social media on Twitter and LinkedIn started going through the roof. I started getting contacted by other individuals, and it got to that point like where unfortunately the only way how to do it was either to delete my, you know, profile application or whatever it was, or simply delete the app off of my phone. And that's what I wound up having to do, and just like access it through a web browser here and there, because it got to that point where it was exhausting and so stress inducing where I couldn't deal with it,
and anxiety producing. Absolutely. So I actually shut off the notifications. That's one of my tips of what to do. First of all, recognize the imposter syndrome for what it is. It doesn't mean that you're going down this spiral of this dark, depressive state. It is temporary. It is acute. Recognize it. And especially if it came after a promotion, an award, a recognition of some sort. Recognize it. No, it won't last forever. The one thing that I did was I have shut off all notifications on social media, all of them. If I want to look on social media, I will go into the app or through the web browser, but it no longer pops up on my screen. Because, you know, every time that happens, your heart skips a beat, you get distracted, all that kind of stuff. My phone is always, the ringer is always on off, always. When my phone is on my desk, it's always upside down. So I don't get those distractions all the time. I also recommend keeping your resume updated. Because if you keep your resume updated and you need to include everything that you've done, every committee that you've been on, organization that you're a part of. And the reason I say that is if you ever feel that imposter syndrome, just take a look at your resume. And you'll notice all of these things that you are a part of. And the problem is most people don't list all the organizations they are a part of. But list it. Don't worry if you're not sending that particular one out to potential employers. That's your anti-imposter syndrome resume that has all the committees, all the activities, all the organizations that you are a part of. And then you also, I have, I don't know if you could see the video, but this was a gift I received from students in 2003. It is a big wooden box. And in it, I have all the thank you notes that I've received over the years from different people. Every time you make an impact on somebody's life, people are still sending thank you notes and they're sending thank you emails. And I have literally printed them out and put them in this box. And the box doesn't close now anymore. And what I do if I'm having a really tough day, I will just open that box and start reading through them. And I think that is really a great reminder of why we do what we do. And this is not a one-off recognition. This is a recognition, award, a promotion based on years and years and years of hard work. And the other is to really get a good group of people around you who are very, very supportive of you. And I think that's the key thing. You can't just do it all alone. You really have to have a supportive group around you. So those are some of the tips that I recommend to people all the time. Just remember, it is going to happen. It happens to, on record, 70% of the people, which means it'll happen to you and me. And it does. So recognize it for what it is. Know it's not forever, and you will get over it.
Something you mentioned earlier I wanted to touch on, because I do this myself. You mentioned about the awards, like the Olympic athletes, and how they don't, except for one individual, hung up their awards. That is myself. Like, I know military individuals, and John can contest to this, where they will have their shadow boxes and all of their awards and their deployments and their coins everywhere. I have not a single thing that is military in my house hanging up anywhere. And it is something that has taken me, and we talked about this briefly too on one of your Optimize Your Success shows, is it took me a long time to even recognize my award in the military of the Bronze Star, or even being in the military and telling people that I was a veteran. So my question to you is, I'm not going to overnight start putting up awards on my wall, because that makes me feel so weird. I shouldn't do that. But how can we overcome that? How can we find that medium balance to get to that healthy point to realize it's okay to hang up those awards that we've done? Or do we ever get there and we just have that white wall behind us all the time? Where's that healthy balance?
So I don't think you need to have a brag wall if you're not comfortable with the brag wall. I literally just framed my doctoral diploma a few months ago. And even after I framed it, it was still in the box. It took another few months to put a nail in the wall. My degrees for my bachelor's and master's were still in bubble wrap from when I moved 16 years prior. So if you don't want a brag wall, don't have a brag wall. But maybe you're more comfortable of having pictures of people who you surrounded yourself with who were meaningful to you. So instead of the awards and the recognitions and the plaques and the stars and the certificates and the shadow boxes, maybe you want pictures of people who are important to you. Maybe that would be more meaningful.
I love that. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I know Erica is dying to ask a question.
I am. So I'm really curious to hear, you know, one of your favorite quotes, something that really inspires you and that may inspire some of our listeners today.
So my favorite quote in the whole wide world is, "They whispered to her, 'You cannot withstand the storm.' She whispered back, 'I am the storm.'"
Wow. I got chills. I don't know if the rest of you got chills, but that was a really good quote.
I love it. That quote. That's such a powerful quote. And John's probably like, okay, yeah. He's married. He gets it.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big individual on quotes. In our last episode, we had asked about it, and I had given kind of like a highlight into my personal life, where I'm someone who lives based around quotes. I'm the individual who I do the status quo of, if there's a quote that has meaning to my life, I get it tattooed on my body.
Last question. And I promise, yeah. John, then I'll let you jump in. So, you know, back to my first question about, like, you know, I'm just starting to hear this whole imposter syndrome thing blowing up. I'm really curious to see, like, when did you start to see this as a trend? And, you know, throughout your career, I know that you focused a lot on, like, high achievers. You know, was there something specific that really drew you to that? And is there any information that you have that you could, like, share with us? Because, I mean, again, this is something that I'm just now starting to learn more and more about, and I'm super interested in it.
Absolutely. So I used to run what's called an MD-PhD program for the students who got the dual degree, both the MD and the PhD degree. And it was at an Ivy League institution, and it had a 3.5% acceptance rate. So you have a better chance of getting into Stanford than you do to getting into this program.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really super competitive, but I realized that even there, I was noticing things of, am I good enough? I'm not as good as the other one. And I've seen that also in the medical school. You know, these are people who have always been in the top 5% of their class, but now they're in a class with everybody who is in the top 5% of their class. Well, not everyone can be in the top 5%. So even within these elite groups, you have it more and more and more. And, you know, I interviewed people, why did you continue to a world championship after an Olympic championship? Because I had to beat this one person to prove that it wasn't a hoax. So I've noticed that these people, it's constant. It's absolutely constant. And I've just been noticing in all the years that I've been working with high achievers. So I do also know that there are things that you can do to mitigate it so that it's not so, you don't feel like you're gasping for air. You're not breaking out into a sweat. It can get bad.
Sounds super taxing, you know, and I mean, in the professional world, we see it a little bit differently, but it's always like, you know, what's next? What's next? Like as a society, that's how we're trained, right? Especially us, like high achievers in the professional field, we're like, what certification in cybersecurity is next? How am I going to advance my career? You know, what's the next diploma I got to get under my belt? So, I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, those professionals that you've dealt with that have told you these stories and, you know, an Olympic gold medal wasn't enough. You know, me thinking that, I'm like, wow, I can't even imagine.
You know, I interviewed the first Olympian I ever interviewed was not, he didn't medal. And we were at dinner with mutual friends and he was telling me about the Olympic Village in Rio. And how going to the gym was so intimidating. I said, why is going to the gym intimidating? You're at the Olymp, you're all Olympians. He said, oh no, they had better running times than I did. They are better. If they do, you know, one extra set or one extra push-up or one extra whatever, are they going to be faster? So it was so intimidating to be in the gym of the Olympic Village. So even though they're all Olympians, even if they're competing in a different sport, right? He was, he did long distance track. So he had one type of body as opposed to, you know, the people who were doing, I don't know, shot put.
Yeah.
Right? They have a very different type of body. So he still said it was so intimidating. And he had, there was so much imposter syndrome. And I was like, really? At the Olympics? Yeah.
You and I can't imagine that. We're like, you already got there.
Great. Like, I'd be happy to just be there.
I'd be happy placed. To the gym. Yeah. Can I just go to the gym and just be a bystander and watch everybody work out?
I'll give you water, right?
And we're coming close to time here. And before we finish off with the last question, I do have a side question to ask that really feeds on the idea of what's going around is that, you know, almost like they're better there, or I have to be like that, or it's a combination of a lot of different things. And do you think that some of the imposter syndrome sometimes derives from the grass is always greener on the other side kind of effect?
I don't think it's that. I think it's the fear that we're always being judged. And I think the second we can stop judging each other and judging ourselves is when that would really help mitigate the feeling of imposter syndrome. And, you know, it was actually officers from West Point who told me sometimes good is good enough. And I was like, what do you mean? We have to go for an A. Good is good enough. Done is good enough. I couldn't wrap my head around it. And he said, and they said to me, if you're going to be a perfectionist, you're never going to finish. So that was interesting. And I kept thinking, but someone's going to judge. And they said, well, what's the difference between an A minus and an A? And what do you need to do to get the A? Do you really need all these bells and whistles on everything that you're doing? So, you know, I think the perfectionism definitely fuels the imposter syndrome and learning that failure is part of the process, but if you have the failure and you have the perseverance and you have the work ethic, the recognition will eventually come. And I think how we can all help each other is to actually what's called sponsor each other. So if a friend was to get an award, it's very hard for her to publicize her own award, but her friends can certainly publicize it for her to show their support, not their judgment, their support. And I think that that's critical.
Which, yeah. And I love that, that really helps like conclude everything, especially what you said with like, I think we all lit up when you said, don't, you know, if you're not comfortable putting your accomplishments on the wall, put the individuals that helped you get there on the wall. Yeah. I love that.
Absolutely. Cause you don't get there alone, right?
Right.
Even Olympic athletes have coaches.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. So we're coming up on time here. So thanks again, Dr. Gotian, for being here today. It's been really insightful for all of us, and I know it's going to be insightful for the listeners. For anyone listening in, where can they find you, like on social media, website, anything of where, you know, where they can contact you if they want to find out more about you?
Sure. So all my social media, the LinkedIn, the Twitter, the Instagram, it's just my name, Ruth Gotian, RuthGotian. And my website is ruthgotian.com. And if you want to learn how to put together your own mentoring team, right, how to get people to really help you with your career, just go to ruthgotian.com/mentoring team and you'll get a whole worksheet there for free.
Awesome. Well, that wraps it up for today. Thank you again for being on the show. And for our listeners, you know where to find Dr. Gotian if you would like to find out more about her.
Sounds great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Hackers and Hack Zen podcast with Erica, Jax, and John. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.